Finovate showcases cutting-edge banking and financial technology through a global conference series featuring short-form demos and thought leadership. Now, the conversation continues on the Finovate podcast.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Finovate podcast. We are on site here at Finovate Europe 2024, so forgive us if there's some background noise coming through, but I'm talking here with Jack Spears, UK Banking and Lending Sales Director at Tink. Jack, thanks so much for taking the time to chat with me here.
Thank you very much. No, thanks for having me on.
So one of the things we want to talk about today is really Tink has just released a report focusing on the idea of transforming lending as a response to the cost of living crisis. Fascinating report that we'll make available to all of our listeners here. Can you start by just kind of talking broadly through how the cost of living is connected to the lending ecosystem? And I know there's two sides of this equation, so we'll approach it kind of from the consumer side first, and then we'll switch over to the bank and lender side.
Yeah, not a problem. I think, you know, if you're talking about a European context and in the talk that I've just delivered, you know, we were looking at a lot of the macro environment and how that really impacts upon that two-sided ecosystem that you've just outlined. So we've got persistent high inflation, and then as a result of that, central banks are raising interest rates to combat that. You know, that's down to lots of factors, geopolitical and otherwise. And really, you know, how does that affect the borrowing ecosystem and borrowers, and then what are lenders doing to combat that? So I think we'll take it side by side, right? So you've got a situation whereby people are coming off fixed mortgages and they're finding that they're spending an extra £200, £300, £500 on their mortgage. And wage inflation has struggled to keep up with that. So really what we've got over the last couple of years is a squeezing of people's standards of living. And our report sort of outlined that in the fact that just under a third of UK respondents that we looked at were stating that they were running out of money before the end of the month.
Wow.
That was the same across Europe in terms of, like, you know, the kind of broad numbers that were the struggling. And what you've got now is you've got people going into the lending market, not only to service things that they would like to have, they're going into the lending market to service everyday spending. So 25% of respondents saying they were turning to debt just to service their everyday needs. That might be bills or what have you. Now that is, quite shocking. And what that does is it really affects the lending side of the ecosystem. So 58% of our lenders surveyed said that they were seeing a greater number of rejected applications. Now, that might be for two reasons, right? They might have kept their lending criteria the same, and then because people's standard of living is squeezed, they're falling out and they've got a lower cohort of customers. Or as a result of the higher risks in the market, they might have tightened their lending policies. So they're finding that actually their cohorts that they can lend to are lower. And then the other factor is, a really interesting stat that came out is 10% of UK respondents actually admitted to underreporting their expenditure or overstating their income on a credit application. So over three quarters of lenders said that fraud risks in loan applications were higher due to the cost of living crisis. So now you can start to see, right, how does that macro environment affect me as somebody wanting to get a loan? But then how does it affect a bank or a lender trying to make money in that market? It's quite a nuanced piece, really.
Yeah, well, and certainly I think the report has a lot more information that we can get into now. But let's, you know, broadly speaking, where do banks and lenders need help in dealing with this shifting landscape? Because obviously there are some existing traditional methods that are out there, but where are those missing the mark when it comes to dealing with and factoring in some of these new pieces?
So I think it's important to mention that, you know, banks and lenders, some banks have been lending to people for hundreds and hundreds of years, right? They've got a model that works. So what we're not saying is they need to rip everything out and replace it with, say, affordability using bank data. But there are areas in which we believe that you can kind of find those marginal gains, right? So traditional methods of affordability assessments come with a couple of obstacles, and I'll go into them in a bit of detail. But for one, they rely heavily on the applicant's manual input of data, or market estimates of spending. Now, for anyone that's ever applied for a mortgage, I recently had to get a new mortgage, and I know, I wish the interest rates were kinder to me, but there you go. One of the questions was, how much have I spent on average on groceries over the last 6 months? Now, I'm not sure if you can answer that question, but I certainly didn't have that top of mind.
No, I think I would struggle to even come up with an estimate, quite frankly. And honestly, if I was confronted with that data, it might be shocking to me when I see exactly how much actually goes out the door.
Exactly. So yeah, I mean, joking aside, it's prone to human error. So people might not be necessarily understating their spend. They might just not know and they take a punt. Or there's the market averages, right? So if I'm applying for a mortgage, I might actually spend a lot less than, you know, Joe Bloggs down the street, because actually I'm trying to be fiscally responsible because I'm applying for a mortgage. However, if those averages are used, could I then be rejected for a loan or a mortgage as a result of a block or standard process being put in there? Now, there's a couple of problems really like that leads to. So there's that one, but then there's also what we've said about the fraud risk. So people are actually actively, changing their data in order to assess a loan because they need that money, not because they want to buy, you know, a nice new watch or something like that. They need it to pay the rent. They need it to buy food shopping, you know. So what you've got is a situation where lenders have to be really cautious. So 35% of them actually came back to us and said, yes, we are seeing more edited applications. So on the one side, it's being seen by lenders, and even, you know, customers are admitting to it on the other.
Yeah, no, fascinating. So let's talk about Tink specifically, because obviously you're coming here to talk about some of the new pieces that Tink is unveiling to kind of help banks plug some of these holes and deal with some of these changes. What can you tell us about what's coming down the pipeline?
So yeah, I think the lending side of what Tink does is certainly an area of focus for us, and one that we've invested in heavily and will continue to do so. Being owned by Visa certainly helps in terms of, having that long runway and really being able to double down on that product development side of things. So really, if you look at our risk and lending product specifically, we mainly focus on what I call, can you lend to that individual? So looking at someone's income and then looking at their expenditure to look at an affordability assessment. And then we also look at risky spending patterns, which is what we call, or what I deem, should we lend to that individual? So really that's the kind of broad brush areas that we're looking at. I guess, to be honest with you, like where we're focusing our energy and attention is really kind of fine tuning those models and working with our bank partners to make sure that we're giving them that uptick in ROI for the products.
Are you finding that the banks that you're working with are generally pretty willing to be open and share with you? Because I know sometimes financial institutions are somewhat guarded when it comes to these kind of more sensitive questions. But obviously, the more they can share with you, the more you're able to kind of help them out. What's the mentality that you're seeing from the financial institutions that you're working with?
Yeah, I think, I mentioned Visa before. Visa have a partnership in one way, shape or form with pretty much every bank or lender out there. And given that we're 100% owned by them, I think, that's certainly, I've seen that shift in my time at Tink, where we are part of Visa. We are a Visa solution. Therefore, we are given, I would believe, a greater degree of trust, right? And there's already a contractual relationship between Visa and the bank. We're covered under that sort of umbrella. So generally what you tend to find is that they're pretty open. What we can also do for customers is the test, though, right? So they can send us a load of data, anonymized data, and then we can return to them what we deem to be the income on those assessments or the expenditure, right? And then they can test that against their models. So it's not about saying we can do it. We can show them we can do it. And that certainly tends to kind of engender a bit of trust in that relationship.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, I want to switch gears a little bit because one other really interesting thing that I noticed in that white paper was how many customers are willing to share their spending habits with their lender if it improves the application process. On the one hand, it seems like anything we could do to kind of improve the lending process is obviously better, right? There's clearly some pain points around there. But what do you make of that? And more importantly, why is that significant when it comes to what you're trying to do at Tink?
Yeah, so I think, you know, we're really kind of happy in terms of, you know, the intent for people to share their information. You know, you're always told, don't click links in emails and be very mistrustful of anybody asking for your data. So there's that kind of embedded, baked-in fear of sharing anything with somebody that you don't necessarily know. So we can understand that in some aspects, people don't want to share their data. It depends on the use case, right? So from a lending point of view, people, if they are offered a carrot on the front end, generally they're more inclined to share that data. So that might be, hey, if you share your, you know, income with us, we might be able to give you a better rate on that loan. Or you might stand a better chance of, you know, getting an application accepted from our point of view. What we want, so Tink is not necessarily a consumer-facing brand. So really, what I'm looking forward to is getting to a point where, you know, open banking is not really a word that is being used, because I think a lot of that is about the kind of education side of things. And we work really hard on the CX and the UX, really building that customer up to understand what it is they're sharing, why they're sharing, and who the partner is that they're sharing it with, right? So I think a lot of this can be overcome in that customer journey, in the build-up. Yeah, obviously, if you're asked to share your data and you get no prompts, that's going to result in quite a lot of drop-off. And we work really, really hard with our partners to do CX reviews, and we've got a department in our business that look at optimizing copy and things like that to make sure that the end-to-end success rates are as high as possible.
Yeah, I like that you're talking about it from the standpoint of kind of offering a carrot at the beginning of the process, because one of the things, you know, obviously a lot of lending processes are, this is well documented, how cumbersome they are. And so some consumers might honestly perceive the carrot as simply being, I'm no longer getting hit with sticks. Like it's actually less of a pain to go through this. And I feel like this is one of those things where if you work in the space, you know, every time one of my friends goes through a mortgage process, I hear about it. How come, you know, this is so lengthy? How come this information is so difficult to get? How come I've already submitted these documents and now need to submit these others? So the idea that you can do things to streamline that process and alleviate some of that pain is potentially really powerful. And it's not surprising that customers are now kind of looking at this maybe away from sort of the open banking terminology and just thinking to themselves, well, here's a way that I can just speed through this, get to the end result faster. And I get potentially even a more desirable end result, not even just about the process, but where you end up could be.
Well, this is a real. Yeah, I mean, this is kind of a big part of the study as well. And if you download it afterwards, you'll see. But the biggest area of drop off you see in a credit application is where the bank or lender needs to ask for additional information from you, right? A lot of the time that's a manual process. Like, hey, can you give me 6 months worth of bank statements, please? Can you upload them to this portal? Now, in that scenario, if you're given the choice, hey, you can either upload 6 months of bank statements or you can connect your bank account here and have it done in the next 30 seconds, right?
Yeah, pretty tempting.
Exactly. So it's not just about credit risk. It's not just about, you know, what carrot you can put at the front of it. Sometimes it's just down to, is it easier for the customer to do it? You know, we live in an instant gratification society. You can get a Tesco Whoosh delivery in 20 minutes to my house. You can buy something on Amazon and it arrives in the same day. You know, people don't take kindly to friction in the journey. They expect things now.
Yeah, absolutely. And why shouldn't they? I want to end with everybody's favorite topic. You know, a lot of people this week on site here have been talking about regulations around affordability assessments, regulations in general. Obviously, it's come up in the white paper as well. A whopping 88% of UK lenders are saying they're either seeing stricter regulations right now or expect to see stricter regulations over the next year. This is something which, again, it's probably good for the industry as a whole, but it can certainly lead to some pain points. How do Tink solutions help ease that burden on lenders in the face of changing regulations, particularly when there's this maybe sense of uncertainty that we don't exactly know what's coming?
Yeah, so I think, you know, if you're talking about the European landscape in the UK, you've got the UK's Consumer Duty Act and then the Consumer Credit Directive too. And what those aim to do is emphasize the importance on a thorough creditworthiness evaluation. And what does that mean? Well, what they're trying to do is reduce the risk of consumers taking out unaffordable loans. Now, obviously the lender wants to have the customer at the center of everything they do. And from a credit risk perspective, they don't want to lend to people that can't afford to lend to them. So I think all in all, it's very good for the industry and for the customer. But it does place a burden on those lenders to collect lots of information and be very, very certain about what it is that that customer's financial situation looks like. So as I said before, we're not asking or suggesting that banks rip out any other processes. All we're saying is that utilizing bank data that we can enrich for them to give them the granularity of information they need means that they can either lend to a wider cohort, so maybe customers that they don't consider lending to at the moment, or they can basically just, you know, layer that over the top of their traditional credit models. We believe that those two things in comparison give an understanding of a customer's affordability and a much more granular level. We can go down to income streams, not just from wages, but we can go into income streams from pensions, investments, cash inflows. So, you know, talking gig economy or customers with irregular income. It gives a trend line as well. So we can give data going back over a year rather than those 3 months worth of bank statements that you might be asked for or payslips. So really you can see like trends in time. You can see gaps in employment. It just gives that lender much more granularity to make sure that they're not lending to somebody that can't afford that loan.
Yeah, and then really at the end of the day, that's what the regulators are trying to prevent as well, right? And so if you look at it from that standpoint, we're all kind of in it together. But it's obviously an uncertain environment right now, and there's continued uncertainty from any number of areas. I really appreciate you taking the time to connect with me. And again, anybody listening, I would encourage you to read the white paper. You can download it at the link in the episode description. I've been talking to Jack Spears of Tink. Jack, thanks so much for joining us here at Finovate Europe and for joining me on the podcast.
Thank you very much, Greg. Cheers.
The Finovate podcast is produced by Informa Connect in association with Provoke.fm Media. Check out Finovate.com for information on Finovate's upcoming shows and to learn how you can get involved. The discount code Finovate Podcast will save you 20% on tickets to all of our events. And you can email us at info@finovate.com for information on sponsoring, speaking, or demoing. Thanks for listening.